Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we release a new sports podcast every week, and we do things a little different here at the Daily Dose. We like to look at sports with a dose of common sense. We don't take sports so seriously that we can't laugh at it here and there, and we do love looking back at some sports history. You know, sometimes we can actually learn something from it. A couple of ways that you can participate in the show. You can go check out new articles. You can go check out a link to the podcast every single week if you just head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. New things going up there all the time. But maybe you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, or there is something you would like to contribute to the show. Feel free to hit us up on any subject. You can hit us on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Or you can message us over on Twitter or Facebook. Just find us over there. Our handle over at both of those is at Daily Dose Sports, DALYDOSE. We would love to hear from you. We would love to get your thoughts. The good thing about doing the Daily Dose, we've got smart listeners. And so we want to hear what you have to say. Today on the show, you know, we've got something a little different for you today. Halloween is next Tuesday. Are you a Halloween fan? Because it seems like there's two types of people in this world when it comes to Halloween. It seems like you have the, I hate Halloween. I hate the costumes. I hate the scariness. I hate all that stuff. It's a huge pain. I hate the trick-or-treaters. I can't stand any of it. It's all dumb. And then you have the other side, the it's Halloween and it's time for me to shine. So which one are you? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Are you somewhere in between? Because it kind of seems that however you feel about Halloween, it probably goes back to how the holiday was for you as a kid or maybe as a teenager in those formative years, doesn't it? Now, my upbringing is a little bit different. The way I was raised, a little bit different, especially when it came to Halloween. So yes, I went trick-or-treating when I was a kid. I mean, I didn't really do anything. I didn't like go for these big costumes. I would wear my peewee football uniform and just walk out and I mean, my whole goal was get candy. I didn't go into these big costumes or anything like that. I just came home from football, put the helmet back on, went out trick-or-treating, got as much candy as I possibly could fit in a pillowcase. But see, then everything changed for me at least. You know, when I was about 11, maybe somewhere in there, 11 or 12, I guess, I had a friend whose brother-in-law opened his own haunted house. It is now one of the biggest haunted houses in the Denver metro area. But at the time, it was just a bunch of crazy teenagers, a couple of young adults trying to scare people. That's all it was. And so what he did is he hired myself and my friend, we were the same age, we were in the same class, little kids, to hide under this small wooden bridge on the way out to the parking lot. So this haunted house was outside for a good portion of it. Then you went into the haunted house itself, and then you came out, you came down some stairs, and as you left, you went over this small wooden bridge to the parking lot to get to your car. He tucked us two little guys under this bridge. We each got a mask. We laid under the bridge, like we laid in the cold or in the snow or whatever might have been falling that day. We laid under the bridge, and we'd each reach up and grab people's ankles as they walked to their cars, gave them one final scare before they left. That was what I started doing. I started doing that when I was 11, 12 years old. Now, you do learn some things doing that job. You really do. Like, I was a little kid, but I started to learn things immediately. One, I started to learn what females wore for their Halloween costumes. Pretty appealing as a youngster. That was always pretty good. Yeah, there's that. The other thing that you started to learn how to scare people. Now, that might sound like an obvious thing. Sit there and say, well, if I jump out at someone, it scares them. But that's not just it, especially when you're working on a haunted house. It's not quite that easy because they come there preparing to be scared. And so what you learn to do and what I learned to do as a little kid, I learned to target certain people in the groups coming through. Groups would come through like maybe 8, 10, something like that, people coming through. And you learn to target the one person. So as they're coming out of the house, I'm watching them come down the stairs. I'm laying under the bridge and I'm watching and I'm looking and I'm saying, okay, who is the person that I target? There's usually one person in each group that is going to lose their mind. And if I hit them, their reaction is going to scare everyone else. So you start to figure out how to scare people. You start to learn that. So I hid under the bridge. I think I did that for 2 years, maybe. I started to get too tall to fit under the bridge, so I couldn't do that anymore. I would get off school I would go to like Pee Wee football practice or whatever, and then I would go to the haunted house and work from about 6 p.m. till about midnight. It was open for about 2 weeks. Now, my older brother worked there. The owner was a friend of the family, so my parents didn't mind. They were like, well, we know where he's at. Yes, he's out till midnight and he's only in, I don't know, what, sixth grade? But we know where he's at and he's safe and whatever. Forget trick-or-treating. I was scaring people. Now, after 2 years, I came back and the owner said, hey, got something a little different for you this year. You've graduated from bridge troll to swamp monster. Now, like I said, the first half of the haunted house took place outside in kind of a swamp area. So my friend and I, we actually got to stand up and be real monsters. We got to wear full costumes. We got like, you know, pants and everything. And we did that for a year. And then the next year, we actually got our own section. He and I did. Now we're, what, 14 years old, something like that? The owner had set up a makeshift gallows. And we would hang one of the guys that worked there, like our helpless victim, right, using a noose around his neck. And then we had a hidden parachute harness that you couldn't see. And people would come up. We'd say, hey, we're going to hang this guy. And a lot of people, of course, you see all kinds coming through a haunted house. A lot of people like, yeah, go ahead, hang him. We can see the noose around his neck. You're not going to hang him. And the platform would drop and our victim would like jerk to like a convulsive death and people were losing their minds. It looked like we hung him. It looked real. And we became actually a pretty good attraction at the haunted house. Again, 14, 15 years old. I'm now playing high school sports, getting off of practice from that, going to the haunted house, and business is starting to take off at the haunted house. Like we're starting to get going. We're open now for like 2, 3, sometimes 4 weeks every night. We're putting through over 1,000 people in a single night. Ticket prices are going up. I'm actually making pretty good money. For a part-time kid in high school, I'm making decent money in this part-time job. And I will say this, at the time we were doing this, and I know this isn't all sports stuff, don't worry, we'll get to sports, but at the time we were doing this, there were no rules about the haunted house. Like, this is back a ways. It was dangerous. You know how like now they say, hey, the monsters can't touch the people. We touch the people all the time. Like, that was not the case at that time. There were fights between monsters and patrons coming through. One guy may have had his hand lopped off. I could tell that story at a different time. We hung people from our gallows, I want to say for 3 or 4 seasons maybe. But the next season, when I went back, the owner said, hey, no more gallows. We're not doing that anymore. The owner now trusted me. I'd been working there for a number of years. Now I'm 16, 17, 18 years old. And he knew I was good at scaring people. He entrusted me to the most important position in all of the haunted house. See, I had watched the previous guys do this job. And I knew this was the spot. Because the guy doing this job scared people even after they left. Like they're walking out to their cars, they're still scared. They're still talking about this guy. Yes, that's right. I was named the Chainsaw Guy. He gave me the coveted chainsaw. Now, for those of you maybe not in the haunted house realm, the blade is removed and we wrapped the blade in like a rubber foam and then some silver tape. So it still looked like there was a blade on there. The great part about that, again, this was back before there were rules, I could actually touch what looked like the blade onto people's person. So if you had the guy coming through acting tough, might run it up his leg. Might run it up between his legs. Either way, got some great reactions. It looked real. He gave me my gas can, he gave me my hockey mask, and I set out to terrorizing people for the next probably 6 or 7 years. I did this even into like adulthood. I was still outside with the chainsaw, so I would put a chair out in my hiding place. I would bring in a small TV with an antenna, and if there was like a college football game or an NFL game or whatever that might be on, I'd have my little TV there, sitting there watching the game in between groups coming through. Other monsters would stop by, we'd have a couple drinks, watch the game, and then every few minutes, I would slide the hockey mask over my face and be like, hey, I gotta go murder a few people, I'll be right back. So Halloween was always a little bit different to me than it was for most people. I didn't really go do the Halloween parties. I didn't go dress up in trendy costumes. I didn't really go trick-or-treating after I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. But I saw grown men burst into tears. I saw girls pass out. And there were way too many people to count that had peed in their pants. Halloween was pretty fun for me growing up. But it was a little bit different, maybe, than the way you grew up. Today, on The Daily Dose, we are going to look back at a few of the spookier moments that we have had here on The Daily Dose. And yes, there have been a few. We've had a few top five lists, maybe even an interview or two, that are sure to scare you a little bit today on our Halloween special. And believe me, I know how to scare people.
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon, and I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Okay, so I've told you a little of my Halloween background, but what is it that scares you? You know, we love to be scared. You might not think that we do, but we do love to be scared. Go check the prices at your local haunted houses. They're skyrocketing. We'll drop $50 a person to go get ourselves scared. Look at movies like It. We line up, we spend a ton of money to go to those kind of movies. So is it clowns? Maybe it's someone in a costume? Or maybe you get scared by things like conspiracy theories. Hey, we've had a few things like that here on The Daily Dose. As we do every single week, we have to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hope you enjoyed the NBA preview, but we've got to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Now, here at The Daily Dose, we don't just talk sports. We are here to help you. We are here to help people. We are in the business of helping people. We try to give you a good podcast every week, try to give you some articles to read every week, some things that you will enjoy. And here, once again, we are trying to help you. Because do you realize that Halloween is on Saturday? And you don't want to be one of those people, the obnoxious Halloween party that, they show up and they've got like full Star Wars costume complete with like working lightsaber. You don't want to be that guy. So what we decided we'd do is we would give you just some, just five simple sports themed costumes to get you through, that obnoxious Halloween party that you've got to go to. And you want to go because you're going to see some friends. You're going to hang out. You're going to have some food. You're going to have some drinks. It's going to be a good time, but you don't want to go just crazy on the outfit. I realize it's easier for a female because a female can just pick like a costume and then you just put the word slutty in front of it. So I'm going to be a nurse. I'm going to be a slutty nurse. I'm going to be a football player. I'm going to be a slutty football player. It's a lot easier for females. Now, some of these costumes, I'll admit, they can go either way. You can be male. You can be female. It doesn't matter. But here are the top five easy Halloween costumes that you can wear. Just something to keep in mind. Halloween, I know it's kind of a silly holiday. I know it's kind of goofy. I know it was just a holiday started by the razor blade companies, but you've got to participate. You've got to get out there and you've got to have a costume come Saturday night and you've got to have something good. So let me give you the five easy sports themed Halloween costumes recommended by The Daily Dose. Number five, and I'm going to be, this is the easiest one of the bunch. This is the easiest one of the bunch. You can be male. You can be female. It helps if you're female, but it's not limited to just females. Here is the Halloween costume. You stay in your car. And you park at the very, very back of all the other cars that are at the party. And then you just complain about how everyone else in front of you won't move out of your way. Your number five Halloween costume, Danica Patrick. There you go. See, I'm helping you. Stay in your car, have people bring you out food and drinks. You kind of complain, how do all these other cars get in front of me? Why won't they just move? Danica Patrick, done. Number four on our list of Halloween costumes, again, a little bit of effort here. It's not, quite as easy. You get your nice suit and tie. You've got the jacket on. You're looking good. You've got a pair of crutches. You're Derrick Rose in the playoffs. Piece of cake. That's the easiest costume you could even have. You might have something to read. Maybe you wear, you know, your kind of hipster glasses. Hey, Derrick Rose, done deal. Easy. Number three on our list of easy Halloween costumes you can put on. Now, this one, a little bit more work, but you might have a wheelchair just kind of lying around the house. Get the wheelchair. Tuck your right arm into your jersey. Like, you know, like you don't have an arm. Now, it helps if you have a big giant head or you can put like a big pumpkin on your head. Peyton Manning, done deal. Number three on our list, a Peyton Manning costume is pretty, pretty simple. Number two on our list of easy Halloween costumes. A little more work again on this one. You get your pimp hat. You get your cane. You get your fur coat. You might even have to put in a grill. I mean, you might want to put some gold teeth in there and get some caps on there and look like you're doing it up. Because if you're the pimp, you're probably Louisville head coach Rick Pitino. That seems like an easy one. That seems like an easy one to me. Last one on our list of top five easy Halloween costumes. You get your We're Number Two pennant. You get your pacifier. You might have some cramps that you're dealing with. And you get your box of Rogaine. And LeBron James is attending the Halloween party. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like I said, like we were just talking about, the NBA is above reproach when it comes to like competitive integrity, right? There's no reason to doubt them. So when I hear that they're not going to suspend Draymond Green from the Oklahoma City series because they're down 3-1, well, that's just how things work out. They just, for whatever reason, they just didn't feel like he needed to be suspended there. Sure, it was a flagrant two. Sure, it was called right there on the floor. But whatever, he didn't really need to be suspended. Yes, he had already racked up the points and they accumulated the points or whatever, but he didn't need to be suspended. But now he gets a flagrant one on a kind of iffy call. Yes, LeBron probably baited into him. He shouldn't have done it. Throwing the arm out there does put yourself at risk. But then I see the NBA kind of switch that and say, well, now we're going to suspend him because they're up 3-1, so they can afford a little more. I don't know. There's no reason to doubt the NBA on this, is there? Well, there's probably not a single reason to doubt the NBA on this, is there? Not when it comes to competitive integrity, right? Yeah, there's probably not one reason. There's probably like 1,000 reasons. Today's Daily Dose Top 5, the top 5 NBA conspiracies. They probably aren't true. They're probably, and the whole Draymond Green thing, not being suspended and then being, that's just all a wacky coincidence, right? Right? Well, let's see, because some of these, I'll be honest, some of these that made, and they're the most popular conspiracies. It's not necessarily that I picked the nastiest ones or the ones that really, really look the worst. They're just the most popular ones. I just picked the most popular. But here's a few conspiracies that have happened in the NBA that might make you reconsider. Number five on our list, Michael Jordan's first retirement. The big rumor was that the reason he retired that first time was that it was dictated by the league because of all his gambling. We do know that the NBA was investigating Jordan's gambling habits. Of course, nothing came of it. And Jordan's dad had been, you know, murdered, and he wanted to get away from basketball, and he wanted to go live a dream that his dad had actually talked to him about. You know, you ought to quit and go play baseball. You ought to quit and go play baseball. So he quit, and he went and played baseball. But I know that there's a lot of people that look at that and say, well, yeah, that was because the league made him leave. Now, I can't come up with a reason why the league would be like, we want less money. Like, everybody here has decided we're all okay. Guys, you okay? You okay with it? We're all okay? Yeah, we all want less money. Nobody here wants to make money. And so we want you to leave for a while. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but popular conspiracy theory when it comes to the NBA. Number four on our list, the NBA prefers large market teams. Something to think about. Just a small stat that I'd like you to keep in the back of your mind. In the past 36 years, there's only been 10 different franchises that have won the championship. Only 10 in 36 years? Yeah, you go over to like the NFL, there's a few more than that, isn't there? Go over to Major League Baseball, quite a few teams have won it. But in the NBA, 10 in 30, and it's probably, we could probably put a lot more years into that. But here's the teams that have won it. Here's the cities that have won it. See what they all have in common. See if these cities have anything in common. Los Angeles, the San Francisco Bay Area, Boston, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Miami. What do they all have in common? That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. They all have a lot of fans. And they all bring in huge TV ratings and huge sponsorship deals. Pretty amazing how that works, isn't it? Just a coincidence. I know. Number three, top five NBA conspiracies. It has to be the 1985 draft. You know how every once in a while, there's this sure thing at the top of the draft? It doesn't happen, we haven't seen it happen in quite a while, but you know, you'll have the Shaquille O'Neal, you'll have the Tim Duncan, you'll have the LeBron James. Well, 1985 had that big time with Georgetown center Patrick Ewing. Everyone looked at Ewing and said, dude, this guy is he's going to be a great player for a long time. And at the time, what the NBA did when they did their lottery, so now you have the ping pong balls and whatever, and we can discuss how, if that's clean or not. But what the NBA would do is they would take like the bottom six or seven teams, they would put the names in a big envelope, and then they would put the envelope in a big clear drum. They would spin the drum, they would randomly, of course, select who got the top pick. They would take the big envelope out, they would go set it under the team name, and then they would all open them and see who got first pick. So here are the teams that were in it in 1985. New York, Indiana, the Clippers, Seattle, Atlanta, Sacramento, and Golden State all had an envelope. They all had an envelope. Of course, we know that the NBA likes large market teams. We just talked about that on number four. New York, it would be kind of nice if the Knicks were good every once in a while. And the rumor is that the envelope for the Knicks had been frozen so that when David Stern reached his dirty little grubby hand in there, he would be able to find the cold one and put it up first. That's the rumor. There's also a rumor that the envelope was bent. It had a little bend in it. Now, you might sit there and say, well, what difference does it make? Here's the thing. If you go back and you watch this, it's on YouTube. You can go find it. When the guy comes out there, he has a stack of like six or seven envelopes. He tosses all of them in. He just kind of sets them in the bottom of the drum. One of them, he bangs against the side of the drum. Maybe it's just coincidence. I don't know. I don't have any idea. But here's how the draft went. First pick, the Knicks got Patrick Ewing. With the second pick, Indiana got Wayman Tisdale. The Clippers took Benoit Benjamin. Seattle took Xavier McDaniel. Atlanta took big man John Konkak. Sacramento got Joe Klein, and the Golden State Warriors ended up with Chris Mullin. But the Knicks got exactly who they wanted. Kind of amazing how that worked out, isn't it? Pretty impressive. The 1985 draft comes in at number three. Number two on our list, top five NBA conspiracies, has to be the 2007 NBA playoff game between the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. This was game four. The Spurs were up 2-1. The Suns took the lead late in the game, and Spurs forward Robert Horry body checks Suns point guard Steve Nash into the scoring table. Horry was ejected. Nash is knocked into the, I mean, this is a hard hit. This is a football hit. He blasted him. Horry gets ejected, but Suns players Rajah Bell, Amari Stoudemire, and Boris Diaw all left the bench to go make sure Steve Nash was, you know, alive, still functioning, still had a pulse. And, you know, it's kind of amazing. It just kind of worked out this way. But when they all got up to see how Nash was doing, kind of go to his aid, after the game, which the Suns, by the way, won, they held on and won the game. They won game four. The NBA suspended those players for leaving the bench. There was no fight. There was no real scuffle. They got up. They went and checked on their teammate. But David Stern said, nope. You left the bench. Sorry, got to suspend you. That's the letter of the law. That's what we have to do here. That's just how business works here at the NBA. We do things by the letter of the law, except when we don't. Needless to say, the Suns would lose the next two games without their top players. Those are pretty good players they lost. Stoudemire and Boris Diaw, are you kidding me? That's not even close. Spurs went on to finish it in six. Suns never won another game. Number two on our list, Suns versus Spurs in 2007. And the number one conspiracy on our list. What else could it be? This is the one. 2002. Game 6. The lowly, small market Sacramento Kings actually led the Lakers 3-2 in this series. And if they won this game, they would be going to the NBA Finals. The game was tied going into the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter, the Los Angeles Lakers shot 27 free throws. At one point in the game, Kobe Bryant full-on elbowed Mike Bibby directly in his face right in front of an official. No call, no foul. Now, you might sit there and say, well, you're biased. You're biased. You know who's not biased? NBA reporter, Washington, D.C. columnist Mike Wilbon, who said, I counted at least 6 stunning calls, and every single one of them went against the Kings. Sacramento forward Chris Webber said that the game felt sinister. It didn't matter what we did. We knew they would call it against us. The Lakers won 106-102. Then they eked out a game 7 that was very, very close. And of course, rogue NBA ref Tim Donaghy said, oh yeah, the fix was in on that one. A look back at a couple of top 5 lists that we've had in the past there for you, and you might have remembered those. Now, as we look at other things you might be scared of, maybe you get scared of things like curses, or maybe some scandalous behavior is what scares you. Here's a look back at a couple of those scary moments in the past that we've had here on the Daily Dose. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top 5. You know, the Chicago Cubs just broke the 108-year-old curse of the Billy Goat. If you aren't familiar with that story, around the Civil War or something, the Billy Goat Tavern owner was at the Cubs game, and they kicked him out because he had his goat with him. And he said they said the odor of the pet goat was bothering other fans, even though he always brought the goat to Wrigley Field. So they threw him out, and outraged, the owner of the Billy Goat Tavern, he cursed the Cubs and said that the Cubs are never going to win again. And so for 108 years, the Cubs didn't win, you know, anything of value. But they broke that 108-year-old curse this last week. Cubs get off that and put that curse of the Billy Goat behind them. But you might not realize there are still a number of other sports curses out there that could affect the outcome of games, you know, if you believe in that sort of thing. I mean, it's not real, right? Right? It's not real. Let's take a look at the top 5 current sports curses that are still out there. Number 5 on our list. Hey, it's got to be the Madden curse, right? You know, EA Games puts a cover player on their annual edition of the Madden football video game, and it hasn't always gone well for the players that end up on the cover. In 1999, Garrison Hurst broke his leg. In 2000, Barry Sanders retired from the NFL. In 2002, Dante Culpepper was horrible. He threw 23 interceptions that year. 2006, Donovan McNabb tore his ACL. A foot injury ended Sean Alexander's season in 2007. I don't know if you remember this, but in 2012, Cleveland Browns running back Peyton Hillis had like strep throat and missed half the season. And then Richard Sherman was on the cover just 2 years ago when the Seahawks lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. This year, Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski. Surely this isn't a real curse, right? What could possibly happen? What could possibly? We're not believing this. That's number 5 on the list. Number 4, the Honey Bears. You know, the Chicago Bears established a cheerleading team back in 1978. And when owner Virginia McCaskey took over as the primary owner in 1983, she didn't feel like the Honey Bears were appropriate. But the Bears were playing pretty good football back in 84 and into 85. So she didn't do anything. But after the 85 Bears won the Super Bowl, remember they won Super Bowl 20 against the New England Patriots, she said, okay, I'm putting an end to the cheerleading team. No more Honey Bears. She ended the Honey Bears. And they say the Honey Bears disavowed the Chicago Bears. And let's be honest, the Bears haven't won anything since. They went to one Super Bowl. They played Indy. They got throttled by Peyton Manning. Chicago Bears aren't doing anything. And we remember how good that 85 team was. Anything to do with the Honey Bears? Maybe they can't get a quarterback. Either way. Another one of those curses that's out there. Number three on our list, the curse of Chief Wahoo. Hey, we just saw this one. Believers in this curse say that as long as the Cleveland Indians continue to use the racist logo of Grinning Chief Wahoo, they are never going to win the World Series. Now, that sounds crazy. That's nonsense. They can use whatever logo they want, right? But they were just up 3-1. And they were just dominating the World Series. And they did just lose three straight to the Chicago Cubs. Of all teams, the Chicago Cubs. Is the curse of Chief Wahoo for real? I don't think so. But I don't know. Maybe. I don't think any of these curses are real, are they? I don't know. Number two on our list, the curse of the Pottsville Maroons. Who? Yes, the Pottsville Maroons. In 1925, the then Chicago Cardinals lost the NFL championship game. It was a tough physical game, and they lost the championship to the Pottsville Maroons. But after the game, a few weeks later, the Maroons played an unauthorized game. And so the NFL commissioner suspended Pottsville and handed the championship to the Cardinals, even though they had lost. The people of Pottsville cursed the Cardinals. And from Chicago to St. Louis to Arizona, the Cardinals are now the longest running franchise without a title. Haven't won a title in nearly 70 years. Curse of the Pottsville Maroons? That's just fake, right? Doesn't matter. They just haven't had good teams. There's no curse. They just haven't had good enough teams. But they haven't won in a long time. You think they'd come up with something. So what could be number one on our list? We saw the Red Sox curse end. Now we've seen the Chicago Cubs curse end. Pick a team. Pick whatever team you want. What curse could possibly still be out there? What could be our number one current curse that is out there? What else could it be? Number one, the curse of the Kardashians. Yes, the Kardashian family is a curse. You don't believe me? Think again. Reggie Bush, Lamar Odom, Chris Humphries, Miles Austin, Bruce Jenner, Rashad McCants, Derek Ward, and do not forget the involvement that O.J. Simpson had with this soul-sucking family. Now, why do we bring this up? Because the rumor has it that Cleveland Cavaliers big man Tristan Thompson is dating Khloe Kardashian. Uh-oh. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Will the curse of the Kardashians talk again? Hey, look, me and John both picked Cleveland. We still think Cleveland is the big dog in the East. But do not underestimate the curse of the Kardashians. You can laugh at the other ones. You can laugh at the Honey Bears, the Madden curse, all those other ones. Laugh at those. Make no mistake, the curse of the Kardashians is very, very real. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Of course, we talked about the Olympics. We talked about, you know, some of the things that happened down there, maybe some of the things that didn't happen down there. You know, the Ryan Lochte story, it's odd, but it's not really that scandalous, honestly. It's a little bit strange, but it's really not that scandalous when you really look at it. When you look at some of the other scandals that have happened, yeah, we had the fart pool. Yeah, we had the judo award winner getting robbed. A couple little things that went on down in Rio, but not compared to some of the bigger scandals that have happened. Because, you know, the Olympics have been the site of some pretty major scandals going on. Now, I'm not talking about terrorist acts. Let's separate the two. I'm not talking about the bombing that went on in Atlanta. That's not scandalous. I'm not talking about what went on in Munich when there were some Olympians killed. I'm not talking about those things. I'm talking about actual scandals going on within the games themselves. Few scandals that have gone in the Olympics. Right now, we are going to count down the Daily Dose top five Olympic scandals. Number five, I remember this one. I think I remember all these. I remember this one. 1988 in Seoul. There's a pretty good boxer coming out of the United States named Roy Jones Jr. USA versus South Korea, and the South Korean fighter Park Si-hoon. Jones dominated the fight. He knocked Hoon down once. He landed 86 punches to just 32. The fight wasn't close. Even South Korean radio said Park needs a knockout to even have a chance in this. He didn't get the knockout. He got pummeled. It wasn't even close. But the judges scored the fight 3-2 in favor of Hoon. In fact, after the fight, the referee, he sees the cards. He gets the cards. He raises Hoon's. You can see in his face, like, he's like, what? You didn't win this fight. Hoon actually goes over to Roy Jones and apologizes. He knows. The judges were each banned for 2 years minimum. And years later, Roy Jones was awarded the Olympic Order Award. But he never did get the gold medal. You would think if you found all the judges to be guilty, you found all the judges were cheating, wouldn't you just give Roy Jones the gold? It's not like the Olympic Committee has never just, you know, pulled an award and given it to someone else. He never did get that gold medal. Roy Jones, very much a victim of an Olympic scandal. Number four on our list, 1994 Lillehammer. Do you remember 1994 Lillehammer? This was actually getting ready for the Olympics, but we all remember this one. Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding. You know, they were battling for a spot on the U.S. Olympic figure skating team. And friends of Tanya Harding tried to make sure that she was going to get that spot by clubbing Kerrigan on the knee with a police baton after a morning practice. Bad, as horrible as that is, and it was awful. They went out and just tried to hurt kind of an opponent. They went out and tried to hurt someone so that she couldn't compete in the Olympics. Horrible, horrible. And you know what also was horrible? Because then we had to hear this.
Why?
I will never forgive the people involved in that incident for making me having to hear, why? You know, the friends that actually did it did some jail time for it. Harding pled guilty to conspiring to hinder prosecution of the investigation of all that went on there. Kerrigan actually went on and won a silver, but definitely one of the scandals that went on at the Olympics back in 94. Number three on our list. We could put a ton of stuff just from 72 Munich on the list. We probably could have did a whole list just about what went on in the 72 Munich games. But the big one that stands out, Team USA versus the USSR in the gold medal final of men's basketball. You know, Team USA was 63-0 in the Olympics going into that game, but they were actually behind. They had taken a young team over there. They were trailing 49-48 with 3 seconds left. Doug Collins gets fouled, actually gets knocked into the basketball apparatus. He hits the first free throw. Game is tied. On the second free throw, as he's shooting, the score table sounds the horn. Oopsie. Sorry about that. Sorry for interrupting you. Didn't matter. Collins hit it anyway. But a little bit odd that they would sound the horn. They claimed later it was because the Russians had called for a timeout. Well, you actually couldn't call a timeout at that point. You could have called for it before. You could have called for it after the first. You couldn't call for it then. He made the free throw. The clock started running. The Russians inbound it. The clock runs out. Game's over. No. The Russian coaches went to the officials and said, hey, we called timeout. We called timeout. So they gave it back to him. On the second inbound play, they threw it in, took it down the court, chucked it up. I think it hit the backboard. Nothing. Game over. Everybody's celebrating again. Looks like it's over. Soviets said the horn had sounded a little bit early. Clock wasn't quite out and the horn already sounded. So the Soviets said, we need to do it over again. In fact, USA coach Hank Iba considered pulling his players off the floor and just saying, no, we're not doing this. Because you guys just keep coming up with more and more excuses. And the officials let them try again. On the third time, the Russians scored. It took them 3 inbounds plays. On the third inbound, they scored and won the gold. First defeat for Team USA in men's basketball was in 1972 in Munich. And that was filthy. Number two on our list. Talked about 72 Munich being a host of scandalous things going on. 1988 Seoul. I think we all remember number two on our list, Canadian sprinter Ben Johnson. You know, he wins the 100-meter gold, sets the world record with a 9.79, but tests showed Ben Johnson was jacking himself up full of anabolic steroids. So the gold was actually taken from him just a couple days later, given to American Carl Lewis. It was later revealed at least 20 track and field athletes were showing evidence of doping. If you want to look back, obviously we could go back to the East German women's swim team. If you want to look at some of the stricter drug enforcement situations that they have with the Olympics, Ben Johnson was a big part of that. I mean, Ben Johnson was over there running. Dude's eyes were completely yellow because his kidneys were shutting down. Absolutely incredible what they were doing. I mean, no qualms, no scruples whatsoever about doping. People back in like the mid-80s and stuff did not care. Hey, we're going to jack whatever we need to in our body. We will put anything in, and hopefully we win. Number one on our list of the top five Olympic scandals has got to be 2002 in Salt Lake City. You know, allegations were coming out that the figure skating scores seemed a little suspicious. In fact, it was even mentioned on the ABC broadcast. They were like, the score that these people are getting, they're not matching what we're seeing. The ABC announcers were starting to point that out. None of this makes sense. How are they getting this score? It turns out that they started to talk about some of the judges might be, bot. Some of the judges might have the fix in. In fact, the French judge went back to her hotel room, had a breakdown in like the lobby. Everyone saw her going crazy. It looks like the French judge had been pressured to vote for all Russian skaters so that she could get an advantage for French skaters later. Hey, you vote for our skaters now, we'll vote for your skaters later. In July of 2002, turned out that a Russian mob boss was actually arrested for setting the whole thing up. 2002, Salt Lake City, we had a bunch of filthy judges. Everybody was cheating. For all the talk about the purity of the sport, we talked earlier about the pros and cons. There are some really, really cool things about the Olympics, and there are some scandalous, filthy things that go on in the Olympic Games. Okay, so maybe none of those top five scared you at all. I understand. Maybe you're someone that just gets scared by the realities of life. We have had some scary moments like that here on the Daily Dose. In fact, this next clip might be the single scariest moment that we have ever had in the history of the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. Here at the Daily Dose, you know, we pride ourselves on being, you know, a little bit smarter, a little bit more informed than the average sports shows that are out there. So, with the United States presidential election coming very quickly, we reached out. Hey, we took a shot. We reached out to each candidate to see if they would have any interest in stopping by and speaking briefly with us here at the Daily Dose. And hey, I'm a little bit surprised. They were both generous enough to grant us just a couple of minutes. So joining us right now on the Daily Dose, joining us first is the Democratic Party nominee, former First Lady, former New York State Senator, and former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Thank you, Hillary, for coming by. Madam Secretary, I would like to thank you for joining us here on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. I know your time is obviously valuable, and we really do appreciate you joining us. I know that it was originally thought you would run away with this election considering your opposition. That hasn't exactly been the case. Do you feel like your campaign has been a little bit of a disappointment? Okay, let's be honest, a pathetic disappointment?
Well, first of all, I always thought this would be a competitive race, so I am happy to have a chance to get out and run my campaign as I see fit and let other candidates do exactly the same. I feel very good about where we are. We are signing up thousands of volunteers, people committed to caucus for us. We have a committed supporter in every one of the 1,600 precincts. And one of the things that I learned last time is it's organize, organize, organize. And you've got to get people committed, and then they will follow through, and then you bring more people. So I feel very good about where my campaign is.
It seems as if Donald Trump, who has no political experience, has been laying out his economic policies, that he has cuts for the upper as well as the middle class, and it seems like those are swaying a number of voters away from you. Do you have a plan to bring those voters, especially those middle class voters, back to your side?
I will be laying out my own economic policies. Again, everybody has to run his or her own campaign, and I'm going to be telling the American people what I propose and how I think it will work, and then we'll let voters make up their minds.
Yes, but in those policies, will there be any tax cuts for the middle class? That seems to be very important to the American voters right now.
I'm going to put out my policies, and I'll let other people speak to their policies, because I think we have to both grow the economy faster and fairer. So we have to do what will actually work in the short term, the medium term, and the long term. I will be making a speech about my economic proposals on Monday, and then I look forward to the debate about them.
Okay. Madam Secretary, multiple polls of American voters show that there seems to be a lack of trust in you personally, and that they would be more apt to believe, I don't know, someone like Bill Belichick than maybe you.
Well, I think when you are subjected to the kind of constant barrage of attacks that are largely fomented by and coming from the right, I can only tell you that I was elected twice in New York against the same kind of onslaught. I was confirmed and served as Secretary of State. And I think it's understandable that when questions are raised, people maybe are thinking about them and wondering about them. But I have every confidence that during the course of this campaign, people are going to know who will fight for them, who will be there when they need them. And that's the kind of person I am. And that's what I will do, not only in a campaign, but as president.
Okay, but what about the claims by many that you actually lie so much that your pants are literally on fire?
This has been a theme that has been used against me and my husband for many, many years. And at the end of the day, I think voters sort it all out. I have great confidence. I trust the American voter. So I trust the American voter 100%, because I think, you know, the American voter will weigh these kinds of accusations.
Well, but you do realize that the American voter is who is voting in that poll I just mentioned, right? I'm not sure even what that means. Madam Secretary, are you a fan of The Daily Dose? Have you heard the show before? And would you say that maybe you have learned anything from it?
Well, you know, let me say this, Chuck.
It's actually Clint. My name is Clint. How long would you say that you've been listening to the show?
3 months and a few days that we've been at this. I think I've learned a lot from listening.
So do you download the podcast yourself? Do you, you know, go find it on iTunes or somewhere like that? Do you go to like rogueintel.com and find it there? You know, you can even go to our Daily Dose website, which I've given before. It's super easy to find it.
I think it's also fair to say that, you know, there's some things about this that I just can't control. I can't control the technical aspects of it. I'm not by any means a technical expert. I relied on people.
Okay, well, it really isn't all that technical. I mean, you're downloading a podcast. You're not splitting an atom. Maybe if you weren't spending so much of your focus on your stupid email accounts, you could possibly figure it out.
You know, I wasn't that focused on my email account.
Okay. Well, I would like to thank you for stopping by The Daily Dose. I wish you luck going forward. You know, there's a little saying that my father taught me when I was a kid. He always told me, if you want to start being more honest with people, there's one surefire way to do it. Stop lying so much. Okay. Whatever. Next up, we've got American businessman and Republican Party nominee Donald Trump. Mr. Trump, I would like to thank you for stopping by the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. We really appreciate it. Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
You know, unlike so many of the other candidates that we have seen, you don't have a history necessarily in politics. What makes you think that you can possibly win this election in 2 weeks?
Look, everybody knows me. I've had an amazing life. I've built an amazing business. And actually, they said, oh, he'd never say what his business is worth. It's actually a much higher number than the number I gave. Jobs back from China. I'm going to take jobs back from Mexico. By the way, Mexico is the new China. Mexico is killing us. What are we doing? We're losing our base. Our GNP is, it's, think of it, it's less than zero. That means we're getting smaller. And all these other countries are growing like weeds.
Okay, but I mean, you aren't a politician. You haven't had to do some of the jobs that go with being president of the United States. Do you worry at all that maybe people don't really take you seriously?
I'm going to make America great again. Politicians aren't going to do that. And everybody takes me very seriously.
Well, I mean, if you say so, I'm just not sure that you have the kind of personal experience that it actually does take to do a job like this. For instance, I run the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and here at the Daily Dose Studios, sometimes the walls aren't completely soundproof. We've worked on them, we've insulated them, we've layered the walls with, you know, acoustical sound foam, but still, sometimes you can hear outside noises. What kind of solution would you come up to help me, the small businessman, with my problem here?
I will build a better wall, and I'll build it for cheaper, and Mexico will pay.
I don't have any idea why Mexico would have to pay for anything. But I mean, I guess if you can do that, I will take the help, I suppose. Donald, I want your honest opinion. What is your opinion of me, Clint Daly, host of the Daily Dose Sports Podcast?
Well, I'm not so sure. Look, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's really a terrific person. I love his stance. He's so different. He's very refreshing.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Have you enjoyed your experience today on the Daily Dose?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being with you. I love your show.
Well, thank you, Mr. Trump. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really do appreciate your time. I wish you the best of luck on your big day, November 8th. Okay, dude, seriously, what is the deal? I don't know if you have a cocaine problem or what. Do you need to see a pulmonary specialist or something? What is with all the sniffing? I don't get it. I don't know exactly what. It literally makes me feel physically ill to hear you sniffing all the time. What is the problem? Do you have like a problem we don't know about? All right, whatever. I told you it was scary. Hey, our Daily Dose Top 5 is coming up next, and you know you can't miss that. It is Halloween season, and we are looking back at some of the scariest moments that we have ever had here on the Daily Dose, and we've got a top 5 list with some of the scariest people to ever play in the NFL on it. You got to make sure to check that out. Just a quick reminder, be sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose to do any shopping that you might need to do right there. Loot Crate offers an amazing range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. It is really easy. You can go to Loot Crate, you can sign up for a subscription of crates that comes every month, or you can just go order a single crate, or you can just go order single individual items from Loot Crate. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. They've got any kind of merchandise you can possibly think of, and it's quality, licensed memorabilia. You can always go back. You can order past crates or past items from them. And the best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you place your order at checkout, just type in Daily Dose in the coupon box. DALYDOSE. We will get you 10% off of your order. Now, if you'd like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that. Please let your friends, your family, and your coworkers know. They can subscribe to the podcast wherever podcasts are hosted. Pretty much anywhere. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to Google Play, Podcast Republic, you name it, they've got it. Of course, Blog Talk Radio has every single episode that we've done. And if you'd like to share the show with a friend, just click that share button wherever you listen. You can send them a direct link to the show. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. You know, rogueintel.com is a family of podcasts of which the Daily Dose is a proud member. They've got a number of other podcasts over there you're going to like and get addicted to. So make sure that you stop by rogueintel.com and check out a few of the new podcasts that are over there. Now, as we do every week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. As we do every single week, let's jump over to our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5 comes to us this week from Mike in SoCal. Mike in SoCal emailed me. Mike is a pretty regular contributor to the show. We have a couple Mikes that contribute to the show, but Mike is a pretty regular contributor to the show. And he emailed me, and we were talking about some of the greatest hitters in NFL history. And then we kind of started talking about, well, who are the greatest hitters like right now? And I'm going to be honest, we couldn't come up with any greatest hitters right now. Cam Chancellor? Rashad Jones down at Miami? TJ Ward maybe here in Denver? I don't know. The game has changed so completely, you can't be a hitter in the NFL anymore. Hitters are as extinct as the dinosaurs. Because of the rules, because of the way that they officiate these games, we don't have hitters anymore. So I'm going to go through today, and we're going to count down the five greatest hitters in NFL history. But I'm telling you right now, we don't have greatest hitters anymore. These are going to be the greatest hitters ever of all time. Done deal. Because it is over. That part of football has ended. And here in a few years, they're probably going to be playing flag football. And I understand. I'm not complaining. I understand these guys, the issues they have, the head injuries, the physical ailments. I'm not necessarily arguing against it. I'm just saying it doesn't happen anymore. We don't have great hitters anymore. Doesn't exist. They have been legislated out of the league. Let's count down the Daily Dose top five greatest hitters. Number five on our list. Gotta go. He played for the Rams. He played for the Cardinals. He played for the Lions. And it's before my time. I'll admit it. It's before my time. But I've gone back and looked at the film. And Dick Night Train Lane was absolutely vicious. The videos that you see of Dick Night Train Lane, they are violent. Violent hits. He was a guy that they had to ban clotheslining for. The horse collar was still legal. But clotheslining, he would just go by and just try to get guys' necks everywhere he went. They used to call it the Night Train Necktie. And I'm telling you right now, if you go Google search Dick Night Train Lane and some of his hits, they are violent, violent, horrible hits. Definitely one of the greatest hitters of all time. Number four, I'm going to stay here in Denver. And I know you can call me a homer if you want to. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos, Steve Atwater. You know, everyone remembers the Christian Okoye hit. You know, that was back, what, like 93 or something. Christian Okoye, the big giant 260-pound running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, comes through the hole. Atwater popped him, knocked him backwards. That isn't even the play that stands out. As much as that play put him on the map, and as much as that play has been replayed, I want you to think about the way that Steve Atwater played in Super Bowl 32. Couple plays I want you to keep in mind in that game. Super Bowl 32, when the Broncos played the Packers, upset the Green Bay Packers in that Super Bowl. The first touchdown of the game, the Packers go right down the field, and Brett Favre hits Antonio Freeman in the back of the end zone. Steve Atwater tattoos him on that play. Now, that might not seem like much, but you have to remember the Denver Broncos had been to the Super Bowl and failed miserably. It made me wonder when he hit him, this looks a little different, because I remember the losses to the Redskins, to the Giants, you know, to the 49ers when, you know, these guys were catching and making plays and no one ever made them pay for it. Atwater popped him in the back of the end zone, one of the first plays of the game. He had the big sack on Brett Favre, caused a fumble. And then late in the game, just a, you know, 30 seconds left in the game or something, Packers are driving. Steve Atwater actually knocks out Darian Gordon, his teammate, Robert Brooks, and himself on one play. You actually see Atwater make this collision with his teammate, and you see his whole body just goes dead, and he just hits the ground. Steve Atwater was a hitter. You had to be aware of where he was. They called him the Smiling Assassin. He would knock you out anywhere on the field. Number three on my list, and I know I'm going to have some people argue that this guy should be higher, but it's my list. When you make a list, you put him where you want to. I'm going to go with Chicago Bears, Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus was just an absolutely ferocious tackler. And I'll be honest, a lot of the plays, when I go back and I watch, you know, some of the YouTube videos and stuff of Dick Butkus, this is a guy that was kind of going out of his way trying to injure you. Giants general manager Ernie Accorsi, he described Dick Butkus maybe the best way you could describe him. When he hit you, you stayed hit. Kind of a good way to describe Dick Butkus, who comes in at number three. Number two on our list, I'm going to go with San Francisco 49er safety Ronnie Lott. You know, Ronnie Lott started as a cornerback. He was shifted to safety, and he actually was built and played like a linebacker. Dude had no problem sacrificing his own body
to just knock someone out or just put his body on the line, he would throw himself into violent collisions. I'm sure you are aware of the story that he had a piece of his pinky dangling off of his finger that they were afraid was going to keep him out of the game. So he went over and, cut it off himself. Ronnie Lott, one of the toughest and most ferocious hitters. Again, if wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, if you were going to be in Ronnie Lott's area, your head had to be on a swivel because he was going to come take your head off. Number one on my list, the Daily Dose top five greatest hitters, I am going to give to the Oakland Raiders, Jack Tatum. Now, I want to throw out just a couple of brief stories about Jack Tatum to describe to you why he is on my list. First off, if you ever watch the old clips, I want you to be very, very aware of what is on his forearms. Because his forearms, he always had the tape going up from wrist, to elbow. I don't think that was just tape. I'm going to be honest. I think there was probably, maybe a hardening agent. There was something going on there because he used his arms like battering rams and he would just club guys in the head with those forearms. You might not know, and again, this is one you kind of have to watch the YouTube video of, but when Jack Tatum was playing, he had a move that he called, I believe he called it the hook. And what he would do, and if you watch some of the old clips, you'll see him do it. What Jack Tatum would do when he hit wide receivers, he would try to get his arm around their head, and right as he was going by them, he would flex it and tighten it and try to pop their helmet off of their head. I believe, like I said, he called that the hook. If you keep an eye on some of those old YouTube videos of Jack Tatum, you will see him trying to remove guys' helmets off their head. He did it quite a bit. Pittsburgh Steelers coach Chuck Knoll, he actually was trying to pursue criminal charges, saying there was a criminal element to the game that Jack Tatum played. If you remember the Immaculate Reception, the pass from Terry Bradshaw to Frenchie Fuqua that got deflected over Franco Harris catches it, Tatum absolutely crushed Frenchie Fuqua, the wide receiver on that play. I still think that play was illegal just by how the play was. But anyways, Jack Tatum, probably the most vicious and nasty hitter that I've ever seen. Saw him in a full-on head-on collision with Earl Campbell, the huge running back down at Houston. They both kind of teetered and tipped over sideways. And of course, we remember the horrible situation we talked about, with the preseason game where Daryl Stingle, the wide receiver for the New England Patriots, was paralyzed. Jack Tatum was a vicious, vicious hitter. And if you were on the field against him, it was very, very scary, something that you knew he was coming and he was looking for you. He was going to try to inflict punishment on you. Jack Tatum, our hardest hitter on the Daily Dose top five. Next week on the show, we will be back to our regular format. We wanted to do something just a little bit different for Halloween, but we will be back to our regular format next week, and we will have our college football midseason report. Plus, we'll be catching up with what's going on in the world of Major League Baseball and that World Series, and we'll be talking a little bit of NFL. Plus, you got to make sure that you tune in for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which way that's going to go. I have to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening this week. I know our Halloween special, it was a little different as we looked back at some previous scary moments here on the Daily Dose, but we are so glad to have you join us every week. Thank you so much for recommending the show to your friends. We truly do appreciate it. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. Email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.